Right, good afternoon, Mrs. Shapland. I'm so pleased that you've agreed to this interview. And Mrs. Mary Shapland. And my name's Angela King, and my colleagues are Janice Morgan and Bernard John. can we start off with where you were born?
I was born in Cardiff.
Right, and when was that?
1938.
1938, right. So, what brought you to Caldecott then?
On the death of my mother, really. We were living at the time in Caerphilly. I was very unhappy. I just had a child, and I think I was suffering with postnatal depression, probably. Yeah. And Peter thought that a change would do us good. We had no more connections, really, in Llandaff. And so we looked from anywhere from Langston up to Chepstow. Called on a friend who lived in Caldecott that I was in school with, and she said, oh, they're just starting to build on Castle Lee. So her husband took my husband over to see it, and the next day we secured a property and had it eventually built and moved in 12 months later.
And is that where you still live?
And this is where we this still live in still Castle live. Lee.
Since 1930? Yeah,
since 1972.
72, mm. Right. Did your father precede your mother, or...?
Yes, he did. He died when I was 10 years old.
When you were 10?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. What did you think of the area when you first came? Because coming from a city to Caldecott...
Yes, but it wasn't a big, busy city in those days. Llandaff was quite quiet. But coming here, it was just a sort of a lovely rural village life, mm. Beautiful scenery, and I felt at home straight away. I made a point of going out and going to church, and somebody collared me in church and said, oh, we have it was the Young Wives Guild in those days, do come, and I went to that and made friends, and I never looked back, and I was very happy ever since.
Yeah, socialised. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Tell me about the house that you bought. What's it like?
We actually went for a house. There were two designs. There was a dormer bungalow or a house, and I actually went for the house because, for one thing, the kitchen was much bigger. We'd come from a bungalow. I didn't want any more bedrooms on the ground floor, and the dormer bungalows only had two bedrooms upstairs, and by that time I was expecting our second child, and I didn't want one up and one down or wherever, so we decided on the house.
Right.
And there were a few of those, more of the dormer bungalows. Originally 60 were to be built on the site, but that expanded over the years as they acquired more land around,
mm-hmm.
And there was quite a biggish estate then.
Mm. And obviously, if that was 1975, you had electricity in a garden, and 72,
yeah.
You had electricity in a garden, mm-hmm. And things like that.
Yeah.
Just to take you back, what games did you play when you were growing up?
When I was growing up? Well, mm. We used to play the street games, of course, were whip and top, skipping, mm. Hopscotch, all those sort of things. Running, I can remember running up and down with windmills once. I don't know why I remember that, but we used to play in the road. There were no cars, lots of youngsters around. It was a great life, really. We lived very near a park. And then gradually, school-wise, we played netball, and we played a game called shinty, which very few people know about, but it's a sort of a hockey game, but you play it almost with a bent stick, the shape of a hockey stick.
Right.
We used to go to the park, mm-hmm. with the school. That was in the junior schools, and then, when I went to the grammar schools, I played tennis, hockey, netball.
Netball, mm-hmm. And what about the fashions in those days? What
do you
remember?
Oh, they were lovely. I remember the very full skirts, and I remember we all made petticoats with net on, mm. and we used to put them in starch and make them stiff, and they used to stick in our legs. It was really uncomfortable, but they were lovely fashions,
yes.
in those days, and the beehive hairstyles, and we used to really enjoy dressing up and going out.
Mm-hmm. And what about music? What was your favourite song from that time? Can you remember?
No, I don't know that I can, really. I've never been a real lover of song music as such. My mother introduced me to the musicals. She was always one of the first that went to all the big Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals and Ivan Novello musicals. One of the ones that really sticks in my mind, I suppose, was My Dearest Dear. That yes. always made a great impression on me. That yes. was lovely. But I went to all the musicals with her.
Oh, great. Good. When you left school, you're in Cardiff, when you left school, what did you do after that?
I went then to Cardiff Technical College and did a secretarial course. And then I went into the bank.
You went into the bank?
In those days it was the National Provincial Bank. And I was posted to Whitchurch, which was only the next area to Llandaff, really. So I was able to walk back and forth to work, used to go back and forth for lunch. There were only five of us on the staff. But I certainly got a very, very good grounding there of what things should be and how things should be done, which has really stuck with me all my life, actually.
Good, yes. Do you think that was a reflection from the grammar school that you went to? What was that like?
The grammar school, well, yes, the high school was the girls' school from the old Howardian school, which was in Cardiff in those days. And just before the war, a new school was built in Penny Lan. It was never used because the troops took over then with the outbreak of the Second World War, and eventually it was converted back, and we were actually the first to go in 1948-49, mm-hmm. and we were the first year to go back into the school as a complete year. By that time they had transferred from the Howardian school, which was bombed, and they were distributed all around Cardiff having classes, but they were then able to settle down in this brand new school with all brand new equipment, wonderful facilities.
Marvellous. And what sort of meals did the family have in those days?
Oh,
and Sundays?
Everything was made from scratch. I can remember stews being done in double saucepans that used to go on for hours. Steam puddings used to go on for hours. Christmas puddings used to go on for hours. The old scullery used to be steamed out to death, but everything was cooked. My mother was a wonderful cook with pastries and sponges, never ever used the scales. And whenever I asked her, how do you make that? It was a little bit of this and a little bit of that, which was absolutely no good at all.
And what about special days like Christmas?
Well, Christmas, of course, in those days, big turkeys done in the local bakery. I can remember my father having to go and collect this turkey from the local bakery, and all the family used to come. My mother had a big house, so we used to house all the family for Christmas, and by that time then she used to have a migraine because it was all too much. And then, of course, the one love at Christmas was always supper with cold turkey and bubble and squeak, which was made from your leftover cabbage and potatoes, but it was wonderful, and that was the best meal of the day, really.
Looks like a happy memory. So, moving on from that, you went to work, and how old were you when you got married?
25.
25, and what's your husband's name?
Peter Shapland, yes.
Yes, obviously Shapland.
Yes, obviously, yeah.
Peter. Okay, well, let's come back to Caldecott. You've moved to Caldecott now, and by now you've had your second child.
No, she was born here. We've been here about 8 months when she was born.
Right, so all of your children were born in Caldecott?
No, Richard was born in Caerphilly in the Miners' Hospital, and he was 12 months old when we moved here.
Right.
And then Susan was born at the end of that year.
Right. So when you came to Caldecott after the city of Cardiff with this young child, were you able to find everything that you wanted to buy here?
Yes, everything. Everything. You didn't have to move out at all. There were all wonderful shops here, all little shops kept by local people, all very friendly. You go in and say, have you got this, have you got that? And if they didn't, if they were busy, they'd say, well, come round and have a look. And you used to rifle through the drawers and find it yourself. So all the children's stuff, all the ladybird pants and vests for the children, every mortal thing.
was fine. And doctors, dentists?
Doctors were excellent. Dentists were excellent. They were all local.
Library?
Yes. Well, the library was always... it was always quite funny, the library, because the library was always, they were always going to have a new library, and this new library never materialised. It was years and years and years, and I know they fought very hard to get it. And they had a porter cabin in the grounds of the school, which we used to frequent regularly. But their facilities were really very, very poor, and it was many, many years before they had the lovely building that they've got now.
Mm. So how do you think Caldecott has changed? How do you feel about
the changes? Well, it's changed dramatically, then? Like every town has, really. I mean, the life has gone out of Caldecott now.
Mm.
I'm not too sure where it's going to go, or what the reasons are in the main. I mean, people now come in and they do a shop. They get everything in one store. They don't have to go to all the stores. I mean, we used to go to one place for the fish, and then we used to go to the greengrocers, and the hardware shop was there. We even had a furniture shop at one time.
Really?
Mm. And a lovely dress shop. You had everything, electricians, every mortal thing was there.
Quite
but,
contained.
Now, I mean, it got to the stage where at one point you couldn't even buy a reel of cotton. And I didn't know where to go the other day for an electric light bulb, but somebody said, oh, the factory shop, so.
It's real, isn't it?
Mm.
So you had two children,
mm-hmm.
and so obviously they went to school in Caldecott?
They went to the local comprehensive school, yes.
Did they like it there?
Yes, they did. Richard, you would think that they were in completely separate schools. Richard went into actually Greyhill School, and he was always quite an academic anyway, and he settled down well. Susan was a different kettle of fish. She went into Castle School, and you would have thought they were in schools 100 miles apart. She never had homework. He always had piles of it. She was always running around. He never ran around. He used to come home looking like he went out. She used to come home looking like the most enormous scruff you've ever seen. But they both enjoyed it. They made excellent friends, and we still see quite a lot of their friends even now. And they both made careers for themselves.
What did they do?
Well, Richard actually went to university and read politics. And then when he came out, he decided that an office life was not for him. So he pursued the army, and then he pursued the police force and was eventually admitted to the police force. Susan, I didn't quite know what to do with her. And I suggested one day that she should try some hotel work. How would she like hotel work? And she thought, that sounded quite good. So we went to the local Deep Weir, which at that time, it's the house at the bottom of Chepstow Road, and they were doing a lot of work there with the people who were coming to be trained in Mitel. And they had a lot of people staying in the B&B. So she went down there two evenings a week for a couple of hours and served at the table, and she quite liked it. And then I suggested she went to the Two Rivers, the old Two Rivers, not the one that's there now, but the old Two Rivers, and try there. And yes, she liked that as well. And then I thought it was a bit of a holiday camp there. So I said, well, I think you ought to go to Saint-Pierre now, and which was a very different kettle of fish. But from there, we took her on holiday one year, and we went to Munich, and she fell in love with Munich. She thought it was a wonderful place. And then when she came home, she said, I'm going to go in for hotel management. And she did. She went to Nash College from the Caldecott Comprehensive to do what is equivalent to an A-level course. She did a BTEC course. And from there, she went to Cheltenham, and she did her higher education course there. And then she acquired a job with Cunard and went on the QE2 for 2 years.
Oh, right.
When she saw the world, had a wonderful time. And then she travelled around Australia for another couple of years and eventually settled down with her then future husband. And now she a couple of years ago, she did a postgraduate course at Portsmouth University, and now she's lecturing in Eastleigh College.
Wow, so they've both done well.
So they've both done well, yeah.
And grandchildren?
Yes, I've got four grandchildren. My daughter's got two. They're just beginning their careers, the boys, 17 and 16, and My son has two girls who are in Caldecott Comprehensive. One is in Caldecott Comprehensive, the other goes next year. And they're enjoying that.
Right, wonderful family life. So tell me something about your career. You've told me about your family life.
What about your career?
Well, what have you done with yourself?
My career. I was in the bank in Whitchurch in those days. And I worked there until actually we were married. And then I found it very hard because we worked 5.5 days a week solid and you never knew when you finished. I mean, you could be there till midnight at certain points. If you didn't balance, you had to wait and stay until you balanced. So I came out of there and I applied for a job in the Cardiff Royal Infirmary as an administrator to the catering officer. And it was only part-time, but that became sort of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because it grew. And it was at the time when the university hospital was being built in Cardiff. Mm-hmm. And so he was doing all the planning for that and really left me to run the infirmary and the maternity hospital and the William Nicol home that Landoc was run separately. And it was a terrific career. I really loved it. It was a lot of organisation of catering events and a lot of administration. And it really was very, very interesting, equipping the nursing homes, the nurses' homes, which were built first. Also at that time, the Royal College of Nursing was built in the grounds of the University Hospital. And then just before the cutting of the sod, as it was used to be called, of the University Hospital took place. I discovered I was pregnant and I had a very bad hemorrhage and I was told that unless I gave up, I'd lose the baby. So at that point, I gave up. And that was really the end of my career until when Susan was 11 years old, somebody rang me up and said, I need a secretary. Do you know anyone? And I said, yes, me. And I went back to Barclays Bank. In Caldecott and worked in for Barclays then for 14 years and then retired.
Wow. What about the church in Caldecott? Did you continue going to church?
I continued always at the church, yes. That was another side of life. The young wives continued until we were eventually thrown out because we were all too old. And we were told that we were no longer acceptable, we should join the Mothers' Union, and not a lot of us were very keen to join the Mothers' Union, and besides we had small children that we needed to be home in the afternoons. So we continued with what we called the Ladies' Guild, and that is still running to this day, and we've got over 40 members, and it's still very, very successful. That was part of that. We used to do big events in the church in those days, big harvest suppers, which everyone enjoyed, but those seems to have died out as well. Really, one of the most successful things in the church these days is the guild.
Yes. Do you think this is because people are moving in and out of Caldecott more now? Or?
I don't know. I just think that one of the reasons, I think, My son, for instance, was a churchgoer with me until he was about 11. And then, of course, the sports scene grabbed him. They started mini rugby on a Sunday morning. And that started to become one of the big breakups, I think, of the family services, if you like, or the whole family would go and worship. I think that was one of the beginning. And then I think, well, they're just not terribly interested, you know. I don't know. I think people think they can live without that these days. I don't know.
Yes, the religious life thing seems to be dropping off.
It seems to be the last thing that they think of, you know.
It's a pity. Did you do anything else as a hobby, for example? Did you have any hobbies? You're obviously bringing up your family.
Well, hobbies as such, in as much as I was always approached to would I do this and would I do that? And two of the things I can think of was when the St David's Foundation started. That was started, I don't know whether you know, by Miss Edgerton at the Royal Gwent Hospitals. Her and a couple of nurses got together and decided that something needed to be done for the care of these, not only cancer patients, but terminally ill patients. And they began to set up support groups in all the different areas. And Caldecott had one, and I was had a telephone call one day and said, asked me if I would like to join, would I like to come to a meeting, see what it was all about. So I did, and then of course I ended up as secretary of that. And that developed into a money, well, it was primarily for fundraising. We used to hold quite a lot of big events there. And then, of course, they started to instigate all the shops.
Yes.
And we managed to acquire a premises with Philip Blatchley, who let us have it for a reduced rent. Quite a small place in those days, and we actually opened this shop. I can't even remember what year that was. It was late 70s, early 80s, maybe not as far as the 80s, but quite a long time. Yeah, the children were quite small. Might have been the 80s, I don't know. I can't really remember. We set that up. We appealed for clothes, and we had clothes, and St David's, of course, set us up with quite a few of the things. But, I mean, money was very, very tight in those days. Everybody was voluntary. And eventually it developed, and we used to give an awful lot of time because some of us were working, and I used to call in there every night on my way home from work. Peter would go down there every Saturday morning and take all the rubbish to the skips. But eventually it built up, and then we managed to get somebody who took charge of it, totally voluntary, and she did it for years. She was wonderful, Mrs. Phillips it was, Ethel Phillips. And she was absolutely super, and she took charge of the whole thing. That was one of the things. And then, of course, it got very big business, and they wanted to get rid, really, of a lot of the volunteers and put in professional shop managers, and moved the premises then to a much bigger premises, which they were able to acquire. And quite a few of us then just sort of faded out from there. We didn't continue. I never regret that, actually, because I think, well, we did the sort of the foundation of the work, and I've always supported them in other ways, but yes. I didn't pursue that.
And then the other spade work. You did the spade work.
Well, yes, we did. Well, myself and half a dozen others. And then the other thing I was approached about in 1980 was that they wanted to set up a Citizens Advice Bureau in Caldecott. It coincided with the big redundancies in the steelworks. And that was a very professional body. I didn't want to be a councillor. They asked me to do that, and I said, no, definitely not. I didn't mind doing the background work of it, the administration. So I became secretary for that. And that consisted in those days of a very, very big committee, because it involved every organisation in Caldecott. They had a representative from every organisation, and there were a lot of organisations in Caldecott at the time. Somebody from the standards department in County Hall, and we had various councillors on it. And it was quite a big professional thing. And then, of course, we had this wonderful woman, and I can't even remember her name, I'm sorry, from the Citizens Advice Bureau, guided us through it. And the local solicitors were terrific in formulated the constitution. It was quite a big administrative job, and that got off the ground, and that became very, very successful. And then eventually we got premises. Jimmy Harris, in actual fact, was one of the ones that got us the premises where the drop-in place for the youngsters is at the moment, next to the police station. And we were there for years, but it wasn't very practical, really, because we had to continually have it soundproofed. It was continually giving trouble in all sorts of things. The room there was hopeless. And then we acquired the old post office, and the council stepped in on that, and they did it all up, and eventually they moved over there, by which time really I had sort of come to the end of my, after 18 years, I think 25 years we celebrated back, it was 1980, 2005 they celebrated their 25th And I sort of more or less finished then. But I did remain on the management committee. And now, of course, they've gone, it's a public, it's a limited company now. So
yes,
they've made tremendous steps from there. But of course, it still is a tremendous thing.
Mm,
but again, it was a very professional body, that.
Mm. What about activities besides all this work?
No, I didn't have much time then. I just spent a lot of time with the children.
Yes.
No, I didn't bowl until I retired. Yeah, yes. And then I used to play badminton. Yes, I played badminton. And then I injured my arm. And when they were building the new M4 motorway, we went for a walk when... one New Year's Day it was, walking along, my foot went from under me, and the next thing I knew, I was in the arena up to my waist in water, and my feet were stuck in this mud, and it was terrible getting me out. It was a cross between 999 and You've Been Framed. I had to leave my shoes in the water. Peter eventually got me out. I had to leave my shoes in the water and walk along this unmade motorway. And fortunately, we saw a local chap that knew us, and he was driving his car along the lane and stopped and hit. And he said, "Are you in trouble?" I said, "Yes, we are." And he said, "Let me give you a lift." So we got over the fence and he gave us a lift back. But I'd severely injured my arm, so I couldn't have to give up badminton. And then my husband had given up cricket and rugby, and he took up bowls, which I thought was awful. But I thought, well, I'd been a cricket widow and a rugby widow, I'm going to be a bowls widow now if I'm not careful. So I thought I'd better join him. So I did go for a bit, and I wasn't very keen on it at all. But eventually it hooked me, and I actually went then to Chepstow and bowled, and never looked back really again in my retirement. Became very involved with that.
So you've had a very interesting
life
in the Caldecott area.
But, yes, it's been good. Yes, it's been good. The people were marvellous, mind.
Would you ever move from Caldecott?
I don't think so.
So many people.
I don't think so, because it's so ideal anyway. We're on the flat. We've got the facilities of a bus when we don't drive, or we've got trains, we've got doctors, we've got shops on the spot. So I don't really see any point in moving. The house isn't too big for us, but big enough.
Big enough, yes. Well, Mary, that's been fascinating. Oh. Thank you very much for sharing it with us. And goodbye.
Goodbye.